From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 2013 when a company named Edgewater Resources submitted a proposal to reshape the look down at Shalott, the port of Rochester. Their proposal called, eventually, for a 10-story building with a 69-room hotel, several dozen condos, shops, at least one restaurant, even a spa. And that was just the start. This building could be the seed to spark even bigger plans at the port. Now, some business owners, some residents celebrated the plan, saying they've waited to see the city make better use of a tremendous asset. Many residents strongly opposed it, saying it was a poor fit, poorly conceived, and that the city should do something else and do it much better. Well, now the city will have an opportunity to do something else, because yesterday, the city surprised many observers by announcing the deal with Edgewater is off. Mayor Lovely Warren said Edgewater failed to meet a deadline to show that it had the money needed to proceed. According to City Hall, Edgewater had asked for another 9 months to secure the finances, and the city has said no. So what's next for the port? Should the city pursue a similar building and development plan, or is it time to consider something else entirely? Let me welcome our guests in studio. Marianne Warfel is here. She's the president of the Port of Shalott Merchants Association and general manager of the Port of Rochester Marina. Marianne, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Evan. It's a pleasure.
Bill Brown's here. He's the systems analyst for TSM Solutions. He's a member of Shalott Strong. That's a group that has opposed the port development plan. Bill, welcome to you.
Thank you. You too.
Well, and thanks to both of you for being here, because I know at times you're going to disagree. That's okay. Our callers may disagree on certain aspects here, and that's okay, because I think there are a lot of questions on what happens going forward. But before we have that conversation in studio, I want to welcome a guest via phone. I will mention that we reached out to the City of Rochester administration, Lovely Warren's administration, yesterday afternoon. They'd indicated they would get back to us, didn't know if they could get someone, but they'd let us know. We never heard back, so we don't have anyone from the city administration, but we do have City Council member Molly Clifford from the Northwest District. She's on the line with us now. Molly, thank you for taking the time. How are you?
I'm great, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Molly, can you walk me through what you saw happening this week? Because part of the surprise came not just from the fact that the deal was off, that was surprising enough, but from the fact that, according to David Riley of the Democrat and Chronicle and others, that on Wednesday, a lot of people were asking about, well, this deadline's coming up for Edgewater. David Riley was asking, others were asking, and that, according to David Riley, the City Communications Department got back on Wednesday and said that that they needed some time to review, and that they said that there was information that they had to take a look at that had been submitted, and that Thursday they got back saying, well, apparently there was nothing to review. They just had a request for more time, and that David Riley saying that the City Hall is now chalking that up to a communications error, that they weren't intentionally deceiving anyone. They simply made a mistake with how they communicated with the public about that, that there was nothing submitted, even though they said earlier this week there was stuff to review. So what did you know? What did you see happening this week?
Honestly, I was a little confused myself. I did send an email to Commissioner Muhammad on Tuesday, basically saying the same thing. The deadline's coming up. What are we hearing? And he responded that their plans were still under review and that there were no red flags, which didn't give me a whole lot of information. But I certainly did think that it sounded like things were progressing, which actually led me to send an email to my council colleagues on Wednesday evening, in which I said that I thought this project had really come to an end and that we ought to rip off the Band-Aid.
I saw some people online critical of City Hall saying, you know, by midweek, when you're saying we need some time to review, and then the next day you say there's nothing to review and the deal's off, that they felt there was something deceptive there. Should that bother us, or do you think that was a simple communications error, Molly?
I really can't speak to that, though I do think we should probably get an answer, because it was confusing, and I don't think it sends the right message about a project which, unfortunately, had already created enough controversy.
Well, in this case, is this just a case of the developer didn't have the money, never had the money all along?
You know, that's what appears to be true from my end. You know, we obviously had some communication issues and some controversy all along the way, but the bottom line was, you know, he had put in an amended proposal that was double the cost of the original one, and it did lead one to believe that if you couldn't get the $21 million, how are you going to get the $42 million? So I do think the bottom line, that was the decision at the end.
And let me go ahead and read a statement from Greg Wakamp from Edgewater Resources. This is, again, this is the guy. This is the group that had put the proposal forward. And it sounds like they're essentially giving up. This is the full statement from Edgewater Resources. Quote, from the day our team was selected as the developer for Parcel 1 at the Port of Rochester, we have worked diligently with the city and community to craft a project that would achieve the goals and vision outlined in the RFP and city planning documents. While completion of funding took longer than we originally anticipated, and we are disappointed to learn of the city's decision to release a new RFP for the development of the Parcel 1 site, we respect the city's decision. We would like to express our deep appreciation to everyone in the community who worked with us to make the project one we would be proud of, as well as our firm belief in a bright future for Shalott. We'll have no further comment until we've had time to review the city's formal decision. Thank you, Greg Wakamp. But when he says they're going to respect the city's decision, it doesn't sound like there's going to be a challenge from Edgewater. It does sound like it's over with them. It's starting over. So what are the questions you have, Molly? What do you want to see happen next there?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, I think that unanimously, people in Shalott, whether they're business owners, residents, whatever, do want to see some kind of development at that site. It is just a question of what it looks like and what the scale and size of it is. You know, Shalott is a great community. There is a lot going on. I know Marianne will talk about the port itself. The marina looks fantastic, and we're getting a ton of interest there. So let's really use that as a catalyst to get the right kind of project where people can mostly agree. I don't think we're ever going to agree 100%, but something that can really support the residents, really support the businesses, and continue to be an attraction for people in the Rochester area and beyond.
Molly, I think you're right. I mean, you're not going to get everyone to say whatever the decision is going forward, everyone's going to be perfectly happy. That's certainly true. And in this case, City Hall did tell the Democrat and Chronicle that they are listening, that no matter what happens going forward, there will be public input. They're going to seek new proposals to develop the port. Public input will be included. And Mayor Warren, in her statement, said, quote, let there be no doubt. We have taken the input we have received on this important jobs-creating project seriously, and we have held this developer accountable. Do you agree with that position?
You know, overall, I guess I do. I think we could have done a lot more along the way with YCAMP, maybe come to this decision a little differently. But I'm glad, and I will take it in good faith, that she really wants to have a good, open, constructive discussion with the community. And I think we can all just look at this going forward and hopefully come out with a good project at the other end.
All right. Before I let you go, then, Councilmember Clifford, I don't want to oversimplify where the discussion goes next, but a lot of the concern we heard from Shalott Strong, and I know Bill's going to get a lot more detailed, all the way down to the soil. That's what Bill does. But besides that, one of the concerns we hear most often with people down there is, you know, is this the place for a big building or not? Should development look different? Should there be something tall and sort of proud and stentorian in stature and voice and attract more retail and development? Or is it a place for something a little smaller, a little more measured on the skyline, on the shoreline? What do you expect down there? What do you want?
Well, this is my personal opinion. I would like to see something smaller, something that fits in with Shalott as it currently exists, and something that won't take away from the shoreline. But if there's a good project and maybe it's a little higher than what I would like, I'm certainly open to that. But I think what's really important is that we recognize that Shalott is such an asset, the port is such an asset, that we really have a project that plays off of that. So the size, to me, you know, I would rather see something smaller, but it's not as big of an issue as that it's something that really fits in and looks great down there.
Okay, so it sounds to me, Councilmember Clifford, like you view what happened yesterday and you view the developments of this week as overall a good thing, because maybe this wasn't the right developer and maybe this wasn't going to work out. But it sounds like you still have some questions about how things unfolded and how the public understood it.
I think that is true. And again, I think if we all come out of this with some valuable learning experience, that's what we should take away. And from the very beginning, if we can try and get as much consensus as we can about the project going forward, I will absolutely support what comes out on the other side.
Molly Clifford is a member of City Council in the Northwest District, and thank you for taking the time to come on the program on short notice here. A lot of people talking about what's happened in the last 24, 48 hours. We'll talk to you again soon, Molly.
That sounds good. Thanks for having me. And I encourage everyone to come down to Charlotte this summer and check out that marina.
All right. Very good. Well, there's no question on the marina. So that's Molly Clifford. Thank you, Molly. Let me turn now in studio to our guests here. And they include Marianne Warfel, who's the president of the Port of Charlotte Merchants Association and general manager of the Port of Rochester Marina. Bill Brown is with the group called Charlotte Strong that has opposed the port development plan. Marianne, were you surprised yesterday?
Yeah, actually, I was surprised, a little bit disappointed, to be honest with you. I think what maybe some people don't realize is that Edgewater is the one that did the engineering and development of the marina, which is, of course, something I'm extremely proud of. The reaction from the community and everybody that's come by boat or as a pedestrian walking around that marina is, wow, this is amazing development. It's really beautiful. And so, again, I know Greg Wykamp well, and I'm disappointed, honestly, that there's going to be obviously a significant delay in further development.
Some people heard this news yesterday, Marianne, and they thought, there's something we don't know here. I mean, how would they pull the plug, particularly if he's got at least some kind of a track record and a relationship down there, as you say. But his statement, you know, it's a brief statement in which he says, we respect the city's decision. He doesn't say, we're going to fight it. We think it's incorrect. The money is coming. Did you expect him to fight it a little bit more, and do you think he still could?
You know what? I actually don't know. Again, okay. Evan, I was surprised about the decision. I actually know that Greg was here probably a couple weeks ago and did kind of an open house to the community and was very encouraging and very open about the plans moving forward and the floor plans of the condos and exactly how the schedule of the construction was going to go. So to me, that was a very good indication that everything was moving forward. And so to answer your question, yeah, I was a little surprised that he was that far into it 2 weeks ago, and we learned yesterday that, you know, the financing isn't there.
Okay. And just as Marianne can't support be here representing every single business person. Everyone's got a different point of view. Bill doesn't represent every resident or every person down there. But I think in many ways, you help represent the kinds of voices we've been hearing on both sides of this, to the extent that there are two clean sides, and that's never really the case here or elsewhere. But I will just ask you, Marianne, in general now, what do you want to see there in light of the fact that you've got this marina momentum, and now you've got a big question mark back at the port? On the business side, are you concerned about what this does to business, and what do you want to see next?
Yeah, I am a little bit concerned. I know that there's been some new businesses that are moving into the port terminal building, and a lot of that, I think, was they were encouraged by, obviously, the marina and also the continuation of further development. And I'm hoping that with this news, it doesn't stall that. You're right, I can't sit here and represent all the businesses that are part of the Merchants Association. However, many of them were very, very supportive and encouraged by this development and positive focus from the city on this development. You know, that hasn't been the case all along. So it was just encouraging to see the city investing and making good decisions, what I feel were good decisions regarding the marina. They've opened up the port terminal building and made it more public access. They've created like a walkway down there so you can walk in front of the port terminal building. And so instead of taking away public access over this marina development, it's actually provided more public access. There's more people coming down there and biking and walking their dogs and using the park than ever. So, you know, I'm hoping that focus continues.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Now that this plan for Edgewater is off down in Charlotte, what do you want to see there? What makes sense to you? What's the best kind of development going forward? It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Now, Bill Brown, I suspect you celebrated the news yesterday, but did you expect it or were you surprised to hear it?
I expected it.
You did.
I did. I did because people kept asking me about the EB-5 funding, which was always a key part of his funding program. And talking to people from the state of New York who are involved with following and controlling EB-5 funding, they said there's no likelihood that the area around the port area would qualify from an unemployment rate basis for EB-5 funding. There's a condition that it has to be 1.5 times the national average unemployment rate, which would end up to be about 8% right now. And it has to be the census tracts right around there. And there's no way that you're going to find an 8% unemployment rate in that area right around the marina.
So you never thought he was going to be able to get the money?
He was not going to get EB-5 funding. And then when he came out with $40 million as a projected cost, and I worked through the numbers from the standpoint of you have so many condos and you have so many hotel rooms, and there was an excellent article last year talking about the average cost of a hotel room and average occupancy. All that information added up to a big hole in terms of trying to pay for that $40 million bucks.
All right, Bill. So I don't want you to give us a full geological soil lesson, but I do want you to remind our listeners, generally speaking, why you and a lot of people in Shalott Strong have opposed this particular project.
I guess there's two part of it. There's a whole lot of people in Shalott Strong who really don't want to see very tall buildings built along Lake Avenue, making it basically a wall to the river and the lake area, and now the marina area. You wouldn't really be able to see the marina coming down the street, Lake Avenue. That's one position. My concern from the beginning, especially when Pike Construction walked away from it and nobody got sued over that, and it was an $18 million project, there had to be something else. And when I started doing research, I found that that area where they'd like to build has a lot of problems with it. It has debris. It has very soft soils, which means if they're going to build a 10-story building, they have to not only go to bedrock, but they may have to drill into bedrock. And then the other thing is the water conditions. The water table is very high. And with the marina right next to the area they were going to construct now, the water table has been, or the water has been brought to the construction area, which would have possibly caused the cost of foundation to go sky high. And if you have that, then you can't get your return on your investment.
Now, to Bill's point on the size and sort of the building up, you know, Marion, I've heard some people who want essentially kind of green space and they don't want development. Others say, I want development, more like what Molly Clifford said. They think it makes more sense closer to the ground, not obstructing views. Are you open to those kinds of proposals that are development but not necessarily straight up like that?
Absolutely. And I think that we're going to have hopefully a good response on this, the RFP the city puts out, because prior it was a development site that was overlooking a big concrete parking lot. But now we have this beautiful marina. We have life coming back to the port terminal building. So I think that there's more to offer some of these developers. And so I'm hoping that we get a better response and more variety of different options as opposed to just a 10-story building. I support having a hotel down there. I know that a lot of the community doesn't think that that is going to be a successful year-round endeavor. I actually do. So I'm hoping myself personally that a hotel is still part of whatever development that they do down there.
Okay. Bill, do you get the sense that going forward, Shalott Strong and residents who have opposed this project, are they going to be split on, you know, some who don't want any development at all, some who want to see different kinds of development than what Edgewater proposed?
I really think the communities from our side, from the Shalott Strong side, are just as interested in development down at the port as anyone else. It's more of what will it be, mm-hmm. and where will it be. Closing off the vision of the marina and the river and the lake by having a series of tall buildings right along Lake Avenue is a big negative for them. And there are other alternatives. There are other properties there that could be taken advantage of, including probably the south end of those parcels, which would not obstruct that view.
All right, let me get some phone calls because we've got some folks waiting to weigh in as we talk about what happens going forward in Shalott. This is Mike in Rochester. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. I hope my signal is good for you.
Yeah,
today.
You sound good, sir.
All righty. We're getting some rain. Thank God for that.
Yes, that is true.
Listen, I'm going to make a statement, and then I'll hang up, and you can address the statement. Until they get the criminal element under control at Shalott Picnic Area and Shalott Beach, a lot of families, including myself with my three daughters, we're never going to go down there. I have been down there on two occasions in the last 2 years and seen warfare. And I'm talking about you just had five people stabbed down there last week. It's a constant, ongoing problem. How do you expect people to come down there, families, and enjoy what you want to accomplish and have that element that is not being addressed by our mayor and our sheriff department, who is in control of the Monroe County Parks, which includes Charlotte Beach. And I'll leave it at that, and I'll listen to your response on the radio.
Mike, thank you. Yeah,
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Mike, thank you so much for the phone call. And, you know, I suspect his point of view is he's not the only one who feels that way. Marion Warfel, who's the president of the Port of Charlotte Merchants Association, you've probably heard concerns like that. Is that overblowing the problem, or do you share that concern?
You know, I think that there has to be a better focus from our Rochester Police Department on more patrolling down in that area. It seems when it's a sunny, beautiful day, there's a lot of people down there. And unfortunately, we did have an incident on Sunday night. It was kind of blown out of perspective, in my opinion, from the media. They kept saying that it was, you know, it happened at the Port of Rochester Marina and all of these things. It actually was over towards the park. It was one person that obviously either, I don't know, was drunk or on drugs that stabbed five people in a very isolated incident. But on Sunday night, I was down there at 10 o'clock, and the area was extremely busy, and it was not enough patrol down there. So I actually agree with that caller that has to be more of a focus from the city.
City Hall and police, are they responding directly to your and other concerns on that, you think?
Yeah, we actually just had a meeting this week, and they are definitely focusing further.
Okay. Bill, concerns about that?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's the same that Marianne has. If there's a feeling of being insecure in terms of going to that area, you're just not going to go there. And
as Mike said, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Question from a listener wants to know, for those who supported a hotel, and you heard Marianne say that you still think a hotel could work there.
I do.
This listener wants to know, how could a hotel be supported when there isn't easy transportation to things to do in the city, and there's not a whole lot to do in the immediate Charlotte area?
Well, I think that if we built a hotel, we could put in some sort of infrastructure to provide easy transportation to the city. You know, it's one of those things that we have to make this development happen and then put some of those smaller elements in place to support it.
Okay, so in other words, you don't disagree right now there are those transportation issues, but you think that could come with a hotel?
Absolutely. There's opportunities for a trolley system down there or for, you know, a more public transportation. I think that there's opportunities for all of that if we had a hotel and development down there.
Bill, your concerns about a hotel and a building of that size are maybe a little different in nature. Again, they're more soil-based and whether that land can support that kind of development. But do you think that listener's concerns about just simple transportation and effective utility, is that a fair concern?
Oh, that absolutely. It's all about a business model. If you're going to put a hotel up there, you've got to figure out how you're going to make money with that hotel. And if you're there after September 1st, the place becomes like a ghost town down
there. Well,
they're
saying they're trying to change that, Bill, right?
Well,
that's part of the goal.
That's right. And when Edgewater said they were trying to change that, we had the opportunity to get pictures of their St. Joe site at the same time of year, and it was just as dead as Rochester was while they were saying that it should be really active.
So you're saying nothing's going to change that? You think winter is always going to be essentially dead there?
Always or everything, you know, absolutely, probably not. But in terms of people, where they'll be during the winter months along the lake, they're going to be in their homes. They're not going to be out walking around the area or even walking around the marina at that point in time, I don't think.
All right. So, Marianne, do you share Bill's feeling on that, or are you more optimistic about getting more business drummed up during the winter with more development there?
You know what? I'm much more optimistic. I mean, the two new businesses that are going into the port terminal building are planning on being open year-round. There's an existing business, California Roland, that is successful there year-round. And I think that with a hotel that has a spa and possibly a banquet facility or opportunity for some corporate events and that sort of thing, will change that whole image of Charlotte being desolate in the winter. So I'm very optimistic that whole perception could change.
So this is where they agree to disagree on that one.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let me get back to the phones. Ed in Rochester. Go ahead, Ed.
Good morning, Evan and panel. Thanks for taking the
good
call.
Good afternoon, Ed, unless you're calling from somewhere else.
Good afternoon. I beg your pardon.
That's okay.
As you have said, there are many different views about the port pros and cons. And in order to take into account all those different views and all the best viewpoints and creative thinking, we really need to have a process that will ensure that. And as we go ahead from here, we're going to find that we could actually repeat history if we don't watch out as to how we define the requests for proposals that the city has apparently already started to reset in motion. And the process that goes ahead, therefore, is so important so we don't just repeat our mistakes. We don't ask for something that will only result in certain kinds of developments that will resemble the last one. And that way we get it right. We get community consensus, we get pride for community participation and engagement, and we feel good about transparency and genuine efforts to make the port the special place that it is. It's also the development is also not just a matter of residents and businesses in that area. It's an iconic part of Rochester that the entire community should be interested in protecting and optimizing. And we want to get that right, and I hope that that takes place.
Ed, do you have confidence that the city is going to follow through on their promise to not only hold public forums, but really take into account different stakeholders and listen on this?
Good question. It remains to be seen, I guess. One of the things that troubles me is we're talking about development again of that same parcel, which is called parcel number one. And I think that parcel should be left alone because it can't help but affect the vistas and the public park, which is directly across Corrigan Street. And I think that the development that we should be talking about are the resources and assets that we have there now and other locations besides parcel number one. Parcel number two, the TapeCon site, and maybe the west side of Lake Avenue.
Ed, thank you for not only the phone call, but sort of a detailed look at the land down there and what you'd like to see happen. I'll ask Bill Brown if you feel the same way as Ed. You think it's an open question that the city is going to listen, or do you feel confident that Mayor Warren, because what she's saying, Bill, now is not only is the city going to listen going forward, but part of their decision to end this now with Edgewater is they're saying, we have listened to concerns in the community, and we have seen what's going on with the funding, and our decision now reflects all of that. Do you accept that?
I do accept that to a certain level, but I think it was based on the activities of the citizens of the area who went to the city and said, wait a second, you need to look at these things, that they started looking at them much more carefully rather than simply taking the word of maybe the developer in this case or in my case in the engineers that they had hired and in regards to the site conditions.
Well, you know, Marianna, I can look at my Twitter feed just for, I don't know, two dozen ideas that, I mean, everyone seems to have an idea for what they'd like to see down there. And most of them are very sincere ideas, though one sarcastic. Brian says, how about a casino, performing arts center, and college town? Put all of the bad business ideas in one money pit in the same place. But otherwise, everyone is sort of jumping in with, let me just read to you what I'm seeing people say would be maybe even a better idea than what was proposed there. Shopping, retail, beach vendors, yoga and fitness, a wine bar, more housing, Segway rentals for the beach, bait and fishing shops, lighthouse tours, a dog-friendly area. Someone says an amphitheater like Syracuse just did on the lake would be nice. Dan says something like Village Gate on the water there. Roger says a bicycle track for the area for families to use. I mean, everyone's got kind of an idea. Any of this sort of make sense to you, or are you just kind of open to whatever best development proposals
come
forward?
What? I think those are all great ideas. I have been paying very close attention to what Buffalo has been doing with their waterfront. I don't know if you both are familiar with the ice skating rink that they put up. They have put in a maritime museum. They've resurrected some of the historical things regarding the canal. They also, this is going to make your Twitter feed blow up. They also have put in paid parking. And so it's eliminated some of the safety concerns. It's eliminated some of the riffraff that happens down on the Buffalo waterfront. Another example is Niagara-on-the-Lake. I'm sort of addressing the whole seasonality thing that everybody's concerned about, Charlotte being desolate in the...
You're saying Niagara-on-the-Lake doesn't die in the winter.
It does not. As a matter of fact, it's beautiful there through the holidays and through the winter months. And I don't understand why people can't see why Charlotte could be that as well. There's a lot of waterfront communities out there that thrive through the winter months. And so, you know, it includes hotels and spas and things that can be taken advantage of in the wintertime. So,
let me turn to Bill, because two questions on that. Paid parking, she said, has been helpful in improving the safety, et cetera, but some may say it's less egalitarian. So I'm curious to know what you think about that. And, you know, she's right about Niagara on the Lake. I don't know if we're going to create that here, but she says, why not try? Because that's an area that certainly doesn't die in the winter. What do you think?
Sure. First, on paid parking, it becomes a tool for you in terms of controlling things a little bit, which I agree with that. It would be a problem in regards to that issue of public. We want to make the area still as public as possible. In regards to the Niagara on the Lake, I've been up there several different times, and I think that's a great area up there. But when you think about Niagara on the Lake, you don't consider it as being fitting into two very small parcels. And that's one of the problems with the area right now that the city's trying to take advantage of. If we expanded businesses and made more businesses available throughout the area that's called Shalott, that makes a lot more sense to me. But to try to pack it all into those two small parcels does not.
Lori Lynn writes to us and says, any public activity is good. 1,000 Islands closes down October 15th because... no hotel, no hotel, no hotel. That's Lori Lynn's point.
Sure.
So all kinds of different opinions on this. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll come back to your phone calls and continue the conversation about what to do next. Because if you're just joining us and you missed the news yesterday, the city of Rochester announced that the deal is dead with Edgewater Resources for reshaping the look down at the port and at Charlotte. So there will not be, at least not through Edgewater, a 10-story building with a 69-room hotel, condos, shops, a restaurant, and a spa. That was the plan. It's off. They didn't raise the money, and the city says the deal's dead. They're going to go back and start over, and they're going to listen to the public about what to do going forward. We're talking to Bill Brown, who's with Shalott Strong. That's a group that has opposed that particular port development plan. And Marianne Warfel, who's the president of the Port of Shalott Merchants Association and general manager of the Port of Rochester Marina. And she has supported that kind of development and says this is a great time to strike and to do more down there with the marina doing well. So let's get right back to your phone calls after this short break. Coming up in our second hour, leaving Rochester, but not for the reasons you might think. We meet a couple who is leaving Rochester after 35 years, and they explain the stereotypes they've heard from friends and family who assume they're leaving because of taxes or the weather or something else. It's none of those things. They explain, and they explain why they love Rochester even as they have to leave. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and back to your phone calls about what to do down at the port with this Edgewater deal off. This is Bonnie. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes. I think one of the key pieces here, and it's already, I think, been spoken to somewhat, though, is that what people who really, I'm going to use the word love that area, talk about most, is not doing anything that's going to over-commercialize, building many new things. And the key is being able to keep the same feeling you have when you go there that you have now. And if there's a few things added that are kind of minor, minimalist, I would say would be a good word. I think that is really the core piece. You know, there's, of course, the technical issues that have to be looked at as well. But I just think that the feel and spirit of the place is what really has to be maintained. And I think the people in the Strong group really have a good handle on that. So I think they should really have the the greater greater voice in determining does it meet that standard. And the other thing is that this is supposed to be a public place, and I think the more things you put in it, usually the goal is to get higher end things, the more that makes people who don't have a lot of money have the same experience as people who do have money. So I think that's another big factor in the view of what to do next.
Thank you, Bonnie. Let's let our guests respond to some of what they heard. I'll start with you, Bill. What do you think, Bill?
Well, thanks, Bonnie, for the support. You have to somehow protect that character of Shalott, and unfortunately, we are limited in the space that we have to work with to develop something from a retail standpoint. And I appreciate that myself. I think the community is pretty darn special, coming from a little bit farther south, down near Holy Sepulchre, and somehow you got to protect that.
Okay, what do you think?
You know, it's interesting because we're hearing that people are very concerned about the security and the riffraff and all the problems in the park, and yet they want to maintain the current feel that of Shalott. So there's like a couple of different messages that I'm hearing out there from the public, and I really think to make improvements to that area and help eliminate some of the problems we have down there, there has to be some development. I mean, the marina has already changed the environment down there and just the whole feel of what's happening. I mean, I see more public use of that area than ever. Nobody strolled through a big empty parking lot, but they're strolling around a marina and walking their dogs and biking and that sort of thing. And so I firmly believe, and again, I can't speak for all the businesses, but I can speak for a lot of people that I talk to out on site that come down to the marina. They want to see things to continue to develop. And so I think that there's a balance between furthering the development and also retaining what Shalott is all about. I think it can be both.
Marion, I have an email from a listener who has a comment about the marina and sort of who gets to access it. And I think you're well suited to answer it. And I'm sure you've heard concerns like this before. Marianne is the general manager of the Port of Rochester Marina. Catherine writes to us from Fairport and says, a marina is only of interest to a few who have more money than they need. It certainly is not going to be used by or improve the lives of the majority of the residents in the area. And when I read about the number of students in our school system who cannot read, the dropout rate, the low graduation rates, I wonder where our priorities are. She's saying that most people don't even have a chance to use the marina. Is that fair?
I don't think that's fair. I mean, we have courtesy docking within the basin, and we welcome jet skiers and kayakers and anybody who wants to come in and take advantage of the concerts on Wednesday night. We have courtesy docking out on the riverside. So, you know, there's advantages to any boater. And people love boats. They love to sit on the picnic benches that are public and grill at the public grills that are there. So we've provided something really nice for people to come and stroll around and look at. The grounds are beautiful. The landscaping is beautiful. So I actually disagree with that person.
All right. And here's another listener who is thinking about chicken and egg of development. So building a hotel at the port before revitalizing the current area with more amenities is similar to what happened with the fast ferry. The city brought in the ferry, but there was nothing for people coming in to do once they got here. No easy way for them to get downtown. Why not invest time and money into revitalizing the area first before bringing in multi-million dollar projects that the current space can't support? Build it and then they will come is not always true. What do you think, Marianne?
Again, honestly, Evan, I disagree with that. I think we got to start with, you know, the marina was a big development. And I think the next step is another big piece of the development so that the businesses around us flourish and we can, you know, get some of those things you were reading before on your Twitter feed, like bike rentals and Segway rentals and whatever else people are suggesting. I think you can't do those little things unless you have some big things in place.
Well, I certainly can tell you that the city of Rochester is going to have a huge amount of feedback if this hour is any indication. We're already seeing that. Let me get back to the phones. Jim in Rochester. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Now, I realize that, you know, none of you are biologists, neither am I, but one thing I don't understand is why they don't fix the water. You know, why don't they fix the beach? You know, you can't even swim there. You know, and two, why, unless we're enticing businesses to come here, you know what I mean? Like, tax money shouldn't go into creating the businesses. I'm sure that's a matter of opinion, of course, but you got to have the demand in order to do it. You know, if the demand was there, businesses would be flourishing there. Maybe the space isn't there. I'm just curious to know, are you trying to entice or are you trying to create business with the city, that is?
Well, Bill Brown, hold on, Jim, stay there. And let's start with the water and some of the questions he's raised there. Bill, go ahead.
In regards to the water, there's actually a solution to the algae problem that has been implemented. And from what I have learned about it, it works very well. They're able to remove the algae within a few hours first thing in the morning with a device that they have right at the corner of the dock area and the beach area. And that's been very successful within the last year or so.
And is it swimmable right now?
I don't know about today, but I believe that they've been able to make it swimmable most of the time now.
So the city is working on that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's city and state both. Yep.
There should be more media on that, right?
Well, sure, and thank you, Jim. This is a good chance for the media to do that. But I think in some ways, we've seen a number of news stories here and there about that. And but the answer is, yeah, they are working on that. Jake writes to the program and says, what were the costs associated with the failed deal at Edgewater? Is the city spending much money keeping these project requests going? Jake, I don't know. I don't have anyone from the city here to answer that. I don't know that Bill or Marianne can answer. I don't know.
I can't answer it in terms of the dollars, but there has been a tremendous amount of research done in regards to that site that they had to pay for. And I do have one comment, I guess, in regards to that. There's been over $2 million paid to La Bella Associates in regards to doing research about that site down there.
Well, I think the city may tell you, well, they still have plans for that site. It's just not going to be Edgewater.
That's true. Right, but the money has been quite a bit of dollars spent just on the research about the site itself.
Sure, and Jake, it's a fair question, so that's why I would have liked to have someone from City Hall here today. We made that request and didn't get an answer on that, so we will try to get an answer for you on that going forward. But the city will probably at least say, hey, if they have spent money in the past on this, they still have a plan or they still have a goal to have a development there. And it's just not going to be Edgewater. All right, back to the phones. And Melissa is down in Honeyway Falls. Go ahead, Melissa.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I love your show. Thank you for having me on here.
Sure, go ahead.
I just thought that today's topic kind of intertwines with yesterday's about the empowerment of the teen. I forget what it is, but through Hillside, Children Hillside. And that one child who's in this teen empowerment was talking about the lack of transportation.
Sure, lack of access, yep.
Yeah, so if we build up our transportation maybe first before we build these buildings and then, you know, develop and maybe have the kids go down and get jobs down to what they're trying to establish to build down in Charlotte, therefore having more kids working would bring less, you know, violence down in the Charlotte area. Because it just seems like there's these kids who are walking the streets don't have anything to do with themselves. And so if we develop more jobs, you know, this whole thing is like very cyclical, it sounds like to me.
Well, thank you, Melissa. It's an interesting observation regarding how those things intertwine. And I don't think anybody disagrees that I have talked to just about anywhere that more access to transportation, whether it's at the port or elsewhere in the city, I don't think anybody is opposed to that. It's a question of, you know, what's the infrastructure that you want to put in place? How do you want to go about it? Do you want to do more bus routes? Do you want to try to create other forms of multimodal transportation? But I think what she's saying, Marianne Worfel, is more access not only helps business, could help kids, could help employment. Makes sense to you?
Absolutely. I mean, think back in the early 1900s, there was a trolley that went from the city of Rochester down to Charlotte and continued out to some of the other beaches. And, you know, how cool would that to get that back? You know, there's a lot of different ideas, you know. So I agree that we need more access to the to the Charlotte area.
Our engineer, John Andrus, much wiser man than me. I saw him smile with some fondness as at the thought of that, of the thought of the trolley there. And I think a lot of people will at least recall that. And go ahead, John. I mean, I saw you react to that, so I turn it your way.
Well, the reason why I was reacting yesterday just happened to be the 60th anniversary of the conclusion of the trolley system in Rochester, New York, June 30th, 1956. And I do remember the little railroad trolley tracks or train tracks that actually went from Duran Beach all the way over, and actually it extended beyond that. They've taken those out at the behest of some government. And I think that would be a wonderful idea for an access to the trolley system.
Yeah, it's interesting. And thank you for the history lesson there, John.
You're welcome.
You know, the question when it comes to whether it's a streetcar, a trolley of some kind, and we've seen some cities go back to kind of streetcar and other forms of transportation. It's just sustainability. What do you want? You know, what can you spend to build it? Who operates it? What does it cost to maintain? But I think all of that probably factors in. At the very least, Bill and Marianne, this looks like a blank canvas, a chance to reset and ask, what are we going to do here? And how do you do all of those things in sort of in harmony? And that's what I'm getting out of this hour is, again, there may be different opinions on what to do, but this is a great opportunity, is it not, Bill?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. There's an opportunity for sort of do the restart that I spoke with someone else or WHEC about yesterday. But it has to be all-encompassing, and it has to respect the area that you're working with. If you're working with a small box, you can only do certain things with that small box. If you can somehow expand it, like using more of that area down there in a better way, and there is definitely area that could be reused and in a better way, that makes sense. But don't try to do something that's impossible or does not fit.
Well, let me ask you both then, as we get ready to wrap up the hour, what would be the mistake from your perspectives, very different perspectives? Marianne Warfel, the president of the Port of Charlotte Merchants Association, what would be the mistake now going forward? Now that the deal with Edgewater is off, the city is going to come back to other developers. They want new proposals. They want more public input. What would be the mistake there?
Well, I think the biggest mistake is to not do anything, any development. But like I said before, I think now that we have some improvements with the marina and some other things down there, I'm anxious to see some developers come in with some different ideas. I would like to focus really on changing the perception of Charlotte being a seasonal place and that it's desolate down there in the wintertime. I think that we could really change that with the introduction of an ice skating rink or, you know, a holiday festival environment down there and do some more of those types of things. So, I'm really open to anything. And like I said before, I feel strongly that a hotel, I hear that from the boaters that come into town. I hear that from hockey teams that play at Lakeshore Hockey Arena. I hear that from a lot of people that there's no place to stay close to Charlotte. And it would be nice to have some options for that.
Okay, so she says the mistake would be doing nothing. Bill, the big mistake there going forward would be what? Duplicating the proposal we just saw?
Well, I would say definitely that, but the big mistake would be not respecting the environment that you're working with, the area that you're working with. You can do only so much with that, and if you're talking about trying to create a business environment, you've got to create an environment where those businesses can succeed and hopefully succeed without a whole lot of financial help from government.
I think you both expect that whenever the city has these public forums and reloads this, there is going to be a tremendous amount of interest, isn't there?
Yes.
Yes.
There has been all the way through in the last few years. So our thanks to our guests who, by the way, really got along handsomely this hour. And I'd like to congratulate myself as a host for that because I was warned it could get ugly with Bill and Marianne. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. But Bill, thank you. Bill's the systems analyst for TSM Solutions. He's a member of Charlotte Strong. And thank you very much for being here, Bill. It's nice talking with you as always.
Thank you.
And Marianne Warfel is the president of the Port of Charlotte Merchants Association. She's general manager of the Port of Rochester Marina. There will be a lot to talk about going forward. I hope you come back. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you very much, Evan.
All right. I hope, listeners, you hang in for our second hour today because you know, Marianne just kind of talked about some of the perceptions people have that she wants to change about what happens in the winter there, those kind of things. How about stereotypes we have about our city in general that are undeserved? You're about to meet a couple that's leaving Rochester after 35 years, and everyone meets them, they say, oh, it must be the taxes. Oh, it must be the weather. And they say, no, it's none of those things. And we have to get over our negative self-image. They're leaving because they have to. They'd love to stay. And their inspiring story is next.